this week's Widnes Rugby Chat. Following the win at Halifax, we hear from Alan Coleman, talk about that penalty decision, and hear news of some player exits from Widnes this week. Alan Coleman, you must feel like you won that game twice.
Ah, man, it's, you know, first half, I thought first 20 minutes were brilliant rugby from us. High completion. There was at one point we did 14 sets on the bounce, and that's really difficult for doing this game. And, you know, the focus point was how we defended all week. We've spoke about let's defend as though our life depends on it. And we had to end, but I think the first 20 minutes was faultless. How we played, how we got about. A couple of things go against us, which, you know, we don't really want to get into, but massive calls affects us a little bit and they come back in game. But first 20 minutes were brilliant. Can't get over how good we were and how structured we were.
It was much more like what you were towards the start of the season, that first 2025.
Yeah, and I think that's probably down to us focusing on our D. So me taking a little bit of pressure off our players to play more. So then once you defend and you're comfortable defending, you feel as though you enjoy attacking. So we're trying to bring that back to us now, where our focus point is no matter what, they don't score, or if they do, they don't score again, and we just defend like with 10, 15 seconds to go. It's a try against anybody else, but not against us. And yeah, we looked a lot more relaxed with ball.
Can you explain to me the decision before half time on Tom Gilmore? I mean, you might argue that if he had a bit more legs, he wouldn't have got tackled into touch, but everyone was a bit perplexed what the penalty was for. And I know you came on at the end of the half to speak to the referee. How did he explain
it? I just asked him why was it given against us. He said his elbow touched the ground before he passed it, but it doesn't, and they're dragging him. So the penalty's for a drag, and secondly, he's offloaded it, and the touch judge even told the referee that it's a penalty to Widnes, and he gave it a penalty to Halifax. So he sticks to his, he's in charge, but it's probably no coincidence he's not reffing Super League much these days.
I suppose when you look at that incident, it would have been one thing. If it had been dragged into touch and you conceded possession, you might have said fair enough, but it was the fact that you conceded the penalty and then they score off the back of that. That felt like it was quite a key moment in the game at that point.
Massive, because what you've got to remember is Tom Gilmore's made a break, so everything's quick from that ruck there. If we get a penalty there like we should have done, we're 20 metres off their line. If we get another there, it's 24-0, they're gone. I don't care how good they come back and they had a go at us. But it's the opposite flip. You know, I said to our guys, we can't keep giving errors. But that's nothing to do with our lads in that occasion.
At 2018, you made the call to go for a penalty. Whose call was that, and what was the thinking behind it at that time?
I just thought we had to slow the game down a little bit. The rucks were quick by then, and we get back level. And then we're not chasing. We feel comfortable when we're level. We've showed this year Tom Gilmore's a very composed half, so if he needs to take a point, he will. So I think they'd be very wary of that. So they might overplay. So it was vital we got back level so we wasn't trailing in the game. And then it gives us another minute for regroup to take the initial, everything was all them quick looks. So we slowed it down then with that decision.
And of course, you almost got the rewards. They kick off on the full, you get the try after, and it was almost like a double whammy for you.
Yeah, and you know, it's rewarding. I think you get rewards in this sport. And I thought it was rewarded because I honestly think a lot of teams crumble though and get beat with 18-20 points against Halifax. We didn't. You know, you saw that, you was there, James. We defended our line 6-7 times. Mm. As though it was life and death. And especially at the end, wow, you know, you look there and you think, you know, that's desire. That's playing for a jersey. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, it was Jordan Johnston. I mean, wow. It was a good run by Crooks into the corner and he got the offload away. And it looked for all money that Giuffre was over the line, but he somehow managed to claw him back.
Jordan Johnston, I'll be honest, I can't say much about him. If there's a better player in Championship, I'd like to know who he is, I'll be honest. And his desire from minute one to whenever he's on field. If you just watch his kick pressure, he could do three tackles on bounce and he'll still be the only one putting that kick pressure on. He's just so hungry, so desirable to play for the club. And, you know, we're very lucky to have kept him 100%. Yeah.
Does it mean even more to you by the fact that you're pretty much down to your last 13 fit players? You've had to, you know, borrow five just to make a team up today. Does that make it even more special?
Yeah, and we spoke all week. We've not trained for 2 weeks on a Tuesday. We've done gym and we've done video. We've probably done a little bit more video. And I've just said it's pointless. What's the point? We need to maybe look at things we can do better, conserve our energy, conserve our soreness because we're carrying knocks. Jordan Johnson's absolutely bashed to hell and he's still playing. We've lost Cal Field now. And the difficult thing is clubs won't let players go in case they pick injuries up. And, you know, I've been criticised for letting Walks go in and Kieran. But I think when you look, when we let Walker go, we had seven middles, six or seven. Unfortunately, we've lost three or four. But, you know, sometimes it works for you, sometimes it doesn't. So that we can't change that. We are working extremely hard to get more bodies in. And we will do. From where, I don't know, but we will. I know we will. Somebody will come good for us. But I just think the kids who come in today showed the maturity in that middle of the park against some very experienced players.
Were you pleased for Lucas Green? Because, you know, he spent pre-season with you, didn't he? And I didn't quite get in the team at the start of the year. He's gone off and played. I think you're the fifth different team he's played for this season now. But were you pleased to see him in a Widnes shirt after spending the time with him earlier in the year?
Yeah, it was probably difficult for him because when he came on board, I thought we're going to probably keep this kid most of the year because he's very good, his energy, his training, he's in a good system at Warrington. But then we start well in the league and I'm very much rewarding my own players and I think that's really, really important. So but then somebody else will snatch him up because he's a good player, you know. So I think we're probably the club he will play for now if he does. But I'm also, I don't think Warrington will probably let him go enough for us to keep him, but fingers crossed they do. Fingers crossed they don't pick any injuries up, and that'll help us in the long term, I suppose.
You've got obviously the dual reg and the loan players. Is there any scope of any permanent signings, you think, or is it very much that loan market situation?
We're trying. We've contacted every agent now, and you know, if anyone's listening out there and you want to get away from your club and you're not getting picked, or you know, we're willing to sign people. You know, we're inquiring. It's difficult, but we will get someone. 100%, we will. And we'll get the right person and probably hope that they'll be with us next year, so that'll be that kind of signing where they come on, they come early kind of thing.
How much of it, I know the news this week came about the injuries, how much of a blow and how sad are you for Nick Gregson, Danny Langtry and Ollie Brooks that the seasons are finished?
Gutted really, because Nick and Danny's been in and out and then come back and we was excited they were back, it strengthens us and then it goes again. And so I think, you know, the right thing to do is get them right, get them done. So ready for pre-season for next year. And with Ollie Brooks, well, you know, he gets his opportunity, comes in, he has two great games and he gets injured and he's really unlucky. And he has been unlucky over the last 2 years. So, you know, it's unfortunate for him. But, you know, that's another area we're looking at as well in that area for in next week or so, maybe bring somebody in. But I think Zach Bursley-Rowe has been brilliant for us for the last few weeks. Absolutely brilliant. And I think we keep him.
Looking ahead next week against Bradford, this game almost felt like it was an important one to win because you've now got a little bit of a cushion with the results this weekend. You've got a 3-point gap, you know, ahead of Featherstone now. Does that, you obviously want to win next week, but it relieves a bit more pressure. It's not as desperate as maybe you might have needed to have been.
Yeah, we've spoken myself, Tom, and the staff and the players have just said how vital today was. You know, and I think when you see us start, you can see how important it is to us. I'm not seeing all the results. I know, I think Bradford beat York.
I didn't see that.
But, you know, with Featherstone losing, it's vital that. And all the clubs have got to come to us. Now, busted or not busted, I'd much rather be at home than away. It gives us that little bit of breathing space because, you know, we're playing a really good side next week. We'll be underdogs. We're relishing that. We can't wait for it. You know, I've just spoke that I can't wait. They've probably spent most money. They've used most players. They sign who they want. They bring Aussies in. You know, they're a big club. But so is Widnes. So they best be at their best as well.
Widnes then picking up a win away at Halifax. And let's start with the big talking point, Mike, and the penalty decision. Yeah, on Tom Gilmore. I'm sure everyone's seeing the clips of it now. I'm quite relieved, to be honest. I'm quite relieved. Although I do trust my own eyes, but I am quite relieved that it was as bad as I thought it was live.
Do you know something, James? Like, obviously, being behind the posts, you're watching it, aren't you? And obviously, it's hard enough to see as it is. Well, then, like. Today and yesterday, I've watched that video back and back, and I get more perplexed as it goes on. Like, usually you watch a replay back, and you can see at least where maybe the referees come from. But yeah, absolutely not. It that stands out to me. I don't know if you remember, I'm sure you do, the Steve Ganson mistake at Magic Weekend. I mean, that'll go down as one of them, really, just on a much more low-key level.
Yeah, I mean, like I said to Alan in the interview, if they did give it, if they'd have given that he'd been dragged in touch, then fair enough. If they'd have said that he'd gone into touch and that was the mistake, I'd have said, you know, that's fair enough. But the fact that it went from that, it was a penalty, just made it even worse. Witness's response isn't the referee's fault. Witness took a while to get over that in the game. And that probably almost certainly contributed to the Halifax comeback, because if Witness gone in at 18-4, Alan was saying they might have gone in 22-24-4, you know, had they had the chance to go in. And we've seen it from Witness teams over the last few years. When something like that happens to them, they do tend to have a little bit of a wobble. Now, clearly it's a lot different this year than what we've seen in previous years, where they've shown that they can stick at it, and Sunday was a great example of that, where everything was against them, but they still managed to dig it out in the end.
Absolutely. I think, obviously, the Tom Gilmore's situation and what that married with as well was because of losing Callum Field, he didn't come back on. I think all the dual reg players, the forwards, ended up on the pitch at the same time. And they all played the hearts out, by the way, certainly, you know, carting the ball in. But you just, you know, all being together on at the same time, you probably just needed the luxury of having a couple of experienced forwards on the pitch to kind of stop the momentum. And we just didn't have that luxury. But you are right. We did take a while to get over it. And that doesn't excuse a bit of loose defending on our right-hand side, their left-hand side. They looked pretty threatening for quite a lot of the game on that left-hand side, you know, certainly in that first half. But full credit to the lads, particularly, obviously, Alan, when that 2 points taking that in the end because of Louis Dupre kicking the ball out on the full. What a pivotal moment that is. Yeah. And I think as well, full credit to Tom Gilmore for taking the sting out of the game and kind of steering us backwards in a forward trajectory.
Yeah, I think Gilmore's done that a few times in a few weeks. I have to say that I have to give Alan Coleman credit for the penalty call, because at the time I was like, I didn't see the point in going for the penalty. I thought, realistically, you're going to get back to 20-all. You're still not winning the game. But it just goes to, you know, that's why he's a coach and I'm sat chatting about it, to be honest. I think that was a great call. And he almost got the reward for making that big call. It would have been easy to just roll, like I say, it'd have been easy just to roll on and think, right, we've been in our own end for so long, we're 2 points down, let's just get a bit of ball in their territory and go for a try. They decided to level it up, and then you get that kickoff on the full, which, by the way, for a player to do that twice in one match is an absolute coach. You know, the coach, Liam Finn's under a little bit of pressure. He can do naff all about that. And like for a player, especially if Jufre's experienced, to be doing that, for me, that's just no good. But I think that decision to go for the two completely culled Halifax's momentum in the game and was probably the reason Widnes won the game. And so I think for me, that was one of the calls of the season, really.
Absolutely. And in fairness to Alan as well, it's not the first time he's made a big bold call like that, because I was a bit with you. I was a bit sceptical of going for the two. I could understand it, but, you know, I suppose there's a, you know, given that you went 18-0 up and then fell behind, there is a little bit of, I suppose, impatientness that creeps in and you want to go for the try. But I think going back to the York game away from home, when he took Joe Lyons off in that second half, deploying Lloyd Roby on the field, and that changed the whole game there, you know. So there's been more than one occasion he's made big calls that, you know, not that people have questioned, but like it's noticeable. And it's absolutely paid off. And I think, like you've just said there, he absolutely deserved to get the rewards through that bold call. But also, it was a bit of karma, wasn't it, for the getting the luck of kicking the ball out twice, obviously, the penalty in the first half.
I thought for the first 20-25 minutes, I thought Widnes were very good. I thought they played much like they did earlier in the season. They looked very threatening on the left edge. Sam Wilde running great lines off Gilmore, and it was opening it up for Lloyd Roby around the back. They looked really good, and the forwards carried it well. You always get this little bit of a drop-off when Dan Murray goes off just because the nature of the way he plays. And it was a shame that they'd got into such a good position, and then, 15 minutes into the second half, you were thinking, geez, how have they thrown away 18-0? Because it could have been a routine afternoon, really, for Widnes. But they got there in the end, and it was quite an important win. Third win in a row at Halifax. I was thinking about this, actually. There was only 1,400 there, which I thought was... I mean, I remember games at Halifax where both the ends were full of fans, and it's just a shame to see it. But the last three... Widnes have won the last three at the Shea, and they've been 9-8, 28, 26, and 24-20. So if you were ever having to sell Championship Rugby League rights or sponsorship, I think you'd just show Halifax Widnes games, to be honest, because they're always great.
Absolutely. I said leaving the ground, obviously still caught up in the moment. I said you can pay £20 and watch a game like that, or you can sit and watch that Euros final. I know which one I'd pick. God knows how much money people paid for a ticket to go and watch that. But it really was. I mean, as a neutral, I'm sure when you're living and breathing it as a Halifax fan or a Widnes fan, it's not pretty and it doesn't do out for your blood pressure, does it? But you get full value for money, that's for sure.
Yeah, so the win for Widnes gives them, and Featherstone lost to Doncaster means Widnes have a bit of a 3-point cushion now to sixth. I think we talked last week about this run of six games that Widnes had, and we thought if Widnes could win half of them six games based on what the fixtures were, they'd be in a good place. Well, they've got one out of one so far. Bradford at home this week. They'll fancy a bit of that. They've got this cushion ahead of Featherstone, but also if they were to beat Bradford on Sunday, it closes the gap with, you know, potentially go above Bradford. So all of a sudden, you win two on the spin and you're looking up again rather than worrying about what's beneath you.
That's it. And that's sport for you, isn't it? In a nutshell, you know, like I think the saying is as a coach, isn't it, that your highs aren't as high as what you think and the lows are certainly not as low as what you think in the moment. And if we win against Bradford, we go level on points. And I think if I'm right in saying, I think Featherstone's next four games, not in order, are Wakefield, Toulouse, Bradford and Widnes. So by the time they've played their games and we've played a couple more games ourselves, we could see some real daylight there. And you're looking, York got beat, didn't they, at Bradford? Bradford have done us a favour there. So all of a sudden, you know, you've got another battle ahead of you on Sunday, and it's absolutely all to play for. And if we can get over the line, which, you know, I've got a little bit of a feeling, you know, it's going to be a close one. You know, if we lose, it won't be by much, you know. If we can get over the line in that game, you know, you've put yourself in a fantastic position. And full credit, even now, sat talking now after that Halifax game, never mind Bradford, what's to come. But what we went through at Swinton and obviously the disappointment against Batley, what a psychological turnaround that is. And full credit to everybody who's put the hard work in for that.
Yeah, and as Alan mentioned in his interview, all them teams, I think bar Wakefield, have got to come to Widnes. Toulouse have got to come to Widnes. Featherstone have got to. Bradford have got to. York have got to. Sheffield have got to. They've all got to come to Widnes rather than the other way around. And that's a great position for Widnes to be in, because if they can front up at home, and even though they've lost a few home games this season, you mentioned the Batley game there, they've got to try and look at this part of the season and say, right, if we can make a fortress of the home ground, we're almost certainly going to be in the playoffs, but you can almost get top three, top four if you win your home games against these other teams that are in and around you. Moving on to, we'll talk about the lone players then. So there's five non-Widnes players, if you like, in the lineup on Sunday. Keenan Brand and Zach Bardsley-Rowe started in the centres and both did very well. Max Wood and Lucas Green were off the bench in the forwards, and Brett Bailey as well. I don't think we saw loads of Bailey in the game, but certainly Max Wood had a good impact. I think he's tipped to be in the Warrington squad. He'd probably play for Warrington against Wigan this week. Obviously, they've got the issues with James Harrison. But Lucas Green, who spent a bit of time in the pre-season with Widnes and then didn't play a competitive game, he's played for a whole host of clubs this season. I think he's played for Crusaders, he's played for Swinton, I think he played for Bradford. Widnes, with it, he played for Warrington as well. Widnes is the fifth different team he's played for now this season. He's a bit on the small side for a front rower maybe, but it was good to maybe finally see him get a chance and actually take it.
Absolutely. I mean, first and foremost, how any player under them circumstances can learn in terms of what, four or five different clubs, you finish one game and then next week you're driving up the motorway to another team. You know, nobody feels sorry for him and his development any more than me, really. But I was over the moon for him because, you know, I'm sure it did knock his confidence when he was, you know, told that it wasn't really the right time to be at Widnes at the start of the year. You know, after obviously the idea being, you know, he was going to be with us for the majority of the season. But I think what we've seen from him, for what he lacks in size, is quite an agile front rower. And I really think he took his chance, like you said, and he was hungry. And what we've seen with Keenan Brandon, Zach Bardsley-Rowe, you know, they've got better with every game. And we need front rowers at the minute. And I really hope he does get kept around and over the next month have some regular game time under Alan Coleman, and hopefully with more, you know, game time, his consistency will get better and, you know, he'll go from strength to strength, and we could have a good player on our hands from now to the end of the season with him.
Widnes did unfortunately lose Callum Field to an injury that you mentioned. There was a little bit of a murmur around the in the post-match that it was a dislocated forearm, which had everyone scratching their heads because we were trying to decide whether you could dislocate your forearm, but evidently you can't. And so that sounds like it could be one that he's out for a little bit. I mean, there might be a more accurate prognosis of that by now, but a bit of a blow because Field, when he's on the field, is a very good player for Widnes. The Liam Kirk potentially is back this week. I know that he was having to see, I don't know the medical word for this, but is it a neurosurgeon? He's had two concussions, hasn't he? So he has to basically get the all clear from the people who are much cleverer than me looking at concussions and brain injuries so that he can come back to play. So he'll be a big boost for Widnes if he can get back into the squad this week, bearing in mind that Widnes have already beaten Bradford twice this season with Murray and Kirk in the front row. The only downer, I suppose, of the last few days has been the news that Sam Wilde is leaving Widnes at the end of the season. He's going to North Wales Crusaders. There is work commitments has been mentioned as the reason. I heard about this probably in the week before, and there was talk about whether he'd been offered a bit more money by Crusaders, and I've certainly seen a reaction from the new Crusaders chairman that suggests that the Widnes reasoning for his departure is perhaps not what they thought it was. I think that's the most diplomatic way I can say that. But I understand that Crusaders have got a few Widnes players lined up. I think Liam Bent and Ollie Brooks are being linked with the move there. And they're also looking at Jake Spedden and Ollie Davis, who, of course, were at Widnes in previous seasons. But if we talk about Wilde, he got my man of the match in League Express at the weekend. He's been excellent. He's a very consistent player. He gives you 7-8 out of 10 every week. He would probably be in high up people's list for wanting to retain. So how much of a blow is it to lose him? And especially off the back of a good win like that, I guess it's being announced now because they were worried it was going to get leaked. And then also because of the situation with Nasrin with bodies at the moment, you don't really want to be losing anymore.
No, first and foremost, again, I'm disappointed, whatever the circumstances are around it. We're certainly losing a really good player. I mean, come the end of the season, I can't see many more back rowers scoring more tries than Sam Wild. You know, not only is he a strong ball carrier, doesn't miss many tackles whatsoever, he gets over the try line quite often, you know, and I know he obviously famously come through the Warrington system, but it almost feels like we're losing one of our own as well. It almost feels like he has come through the Widnes Academy. Obviously, we know Ryan Lannan's coming in, a back rower, obviously played on Sunday. I think he's a really good signing in fairness, but for me, probably indicates maybe another one's coming back in, because I do have question marks whether we'll see Danny Lantry, you know, pull on a Widnes jersey again. But yeah, massively disappointed. And yeah, I think when we look at the release list at the end of the season, I hope there's not too many more like Sam Wild leaving, really.
Yeah, because there's, you've probably seen, I tweeted this the other day, that there is a little bit of a situation, isn't there, now that's brewing in the Championship, where you're getting there's so many loan players and dual red players kicking around, and now you've got this situation where players are leaving their contracts midway through because they're not being retained the following year. It's no good for fans, is it? Because fans ultimately, yeah, they support their club, but fans back players, they get behind players, they want to see players playing for the club. They want playing for the club to mean something. And it almost feels like the amount of player turnover or the amount of different players, I'm not blaming Widnes specifically for this, by the way. I think across the board this probably fits. I think it's not being appreciated, in my opinion, how much of an impact this has on fans' interest in the game. And I know that the coaches have got to put out 17 every week. No problem with that. But I do genuinely think that they need to look at how this is impacting on fans' engagement.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first, and I think there's two points to that. Obviously, there's the anti-tampering deadline, and when sides are announcing and agreeing to announce players leaving. And then there's also the loan and the dual red side of things. I think for me, I know you've got to have that deadline, the way the sport's structured, you know, a bit before the end of the season, because, you know, I'm sure everybody listening to this understands that players, you know, have to secure the futures, certainly in a sport like this, for the following year. But for me, May time seems way too early. And then the dual reg situation, I mean, Christ, we could do a full episode on dual reg and loans alone. I mean, for me personally, dual registration, I think there should be new laws put in place where you can only get dual reg players that are 20, 21, 22 year old, like put an age gap on it. Some sides in the Championship abuse it to get the upper hand, like getting seasoned 28, 29 year olds, and it's almost a bit like a cheat code. And then you've got the 2 week loans where I remember being a kid and thinking a 1 month loan was short when you compare it to other sports. And as the years go on, we've gone to 2 weeks. I mean, in 5 years' time, is it going to be a week loan?
Well, I mean, I think ultimately you're looking at there'll be plenty of players over the last few years who've got one appearance for Widnes. They probably wouldn't even remember playing for Widnes, and people wouldn't remember them playing for Widnes. And you don't really want that. And don't get me wrong, there'll always be players who might only play one or two games, but it shouldn't be that rent a player sort of concept. The podcast the other week with Ant Walker was interesting. He explained the situation from the players' point of view. My argument is that, and I know they need to get sorted for the following season, but it's not as if there's thousands or hundreds of thousands of players going around. Realistically, if a player's out of contract this year, at the end of this year, or he'll do very well not to get a contract next year with anybody, because there's not a huge surplus of players. It's not like you're playing football or basketball or something where there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of players across the world, or millions of players across the world that teams can pull in. And that's what that I think that's why I struggle a little bit with it, because it's like, well, there's so many professional clubs, they all need 25 players each. There's not loads of new players coming in from overseas or from the youth ranks. So why is everyone so paranoid about not getting I do a lot of non-league football, as you're aware. Players don't even think about it until they get to the end of the season, because they know that they're going to get a deal somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's why I struggle. I can get it with the full-time lads. I can get it with the Super League lads. But for part-timers, where in theory the rugby's around the job, I just don't see how unless you're terrible, which you won't be because you won't be playing anyway, you're going to be able to get a deal somewhere.
I think so. I mean, it'd be fascinating, like, to get a bit more of a player's insight on it, to be honest. At the part-time level, like, and touched on it a little bit, rather than us supporters, maybe there would be another angle on it. But I totally agree. I think as the years go on, it gets even more messy and frustrating as fans. And then you get to the mid-season point, and it comes hand in hand, doesn't it? All this player chopping and changing, you know, and going to clubs early and all that stuff kicks off. And then what happens then? Oh, the loan market just blows up, and before you know it, each side has got four or five loans, dual regs. I mean, how many loan/dual regs was on the pitch on Sunday, James? They had three or four, didn't they, as well?
Yeah. I think the maximum's five. You can only have five in one game, and I think going back to what you were saying about dual reg, and I think we've talked about this before, for me, they should, if you've got a dual reg partnership with a club, they should say to you, right, you can have four players from that club, right, at the start of the year. There's four players that are dual registered between the two clubs, and only them four players. So let's say Widnes had partnered with Warrington. They would have said to him at the start of the year, right, we'll have Bardsley Rowe, we'll have Lucas Green, we'll have Whitehead, and we'll have Max Wood, right? Them four players can only play for Warrington or Widnes in that season, right? Unless they do a 1 month loan somewhere else. But none of this playing 1 week for another club or going like that. The fact that Green has played for five clubs is a joke. That's an absolute joke. How that can be any good for his development is beyond me. Yeah, he's playing, whatever. But the fact that he lines up next to 12 blokes that he might have met a couple of times, I just don't see how that is beneficial to anybody.
As well, not only his development, the playing side, but his confidence and psychologically.
Teams play different. And like I say, I'm not blaming Widnes for this. It's not Widnes' fault. It's the situation that the game currently finds itself in. The post that I made, so a user on the Widnes forum posted this, and I pulled it out and thought it was interesting. For those of you who haven't seen it, I'll read it word for word-ish. To be honest, the whole shambles that rugby league has become makes even diehards wonder whether there is any point in championship rugby at all. Multiple dual reg or loanees all looks very much like a playground pickup. Very amateur and gives regular supporters very little to be loyal to apart from the name. Add to that, we have to start the season quickly followed by the signings for next season. What a joke. Cheering on players that are on their way, soon having no ties to the club. What it does do is encourage you to just watch games on TV as a casual observer. Now, every Super League game's on TV this year, and whatever your opinions on that are one thing. But ultimately, these clubs need to survive. They need people through the gates. And if fans are being turned off, then they need to do something about it. What struck me is that I tweeted that out, and I got quite a response from fans of other teams. So Spike, who's a Doncaster fan, he agreed. He says it's ridiculous for the players. It looks amateur. People can accept they're not being promotion relegation if the league's competitive. Little Rich, Halifax fan, said, do the RFL or IMG even care about the championship? Gary says, makes you wonder how we got by for 100 years before Rupert Murdoch's millions. Yeah, and Joe sums up the Lucas Green situation. Fifth different club for Lucas Green. That's five different sets of supporters in just 5 months have wheeled him over the line. Great for him as he's getting game time, but strange spectacle for a supporter. EGC Plastering said, witness player receiving an award after the game in a Warrington kit in the witness lounge. It was another one. Captain Chaos, difficult to find anything to disagree with. If a side suffers an unexpected run of injuries, bring players in, but it's all a bit rubbish, really. Produce your own and the best get tapped up by Super League clubs who then send them out to dual reg to your opponents. And then Robbie goes a bit far, but he says, most teams are playing for nothing as they can't go up due to IMG rules. Fans are fed up with the system leaving. They're fed up with the RFL. The officiating could go on. This once great sport is dying a slow death.
Some interesting thoughts there.
So yeah, I've got to be in my bonnet about that player situation, but I don't know. I just think there needs to be a reset at some point. I think players and agents won't agree with me, but I think the level of pay has clearly got to a point where it needs to be reset to a more realistic level, because ultimately a club like Widnes, who can attract 3,000 every week, should be able to run a part-time squad of 25 players.
Yeah, and absolutely.
If they can't, it's because they're paying the players too much. But the problem you've got is Widnes can't reset that problem on their own, because, and you might argue that that's actually what's happening. Widnes are being frugal and trying to run the club sustainably, but they're being blown out the water by clubs who are just spending unsustainable amounts on players and luring them away. That might be me being a bit one-eyed, but
no, I think there's definitely a point to that. I mean, like, when we haven't necessarily had dual reg systems, how many times have we turned up and the opposition, Bradford, who are coming to town next week, the prime example, where they've got a 28-29-year-old overseas import playing against you, and this isn't a witness thing. This is a broader rugby league topic, really, about the loans and dual regs. And I think it forces teams into making decisions themselves and feeling like that they have to go down the dual reg line, like you say, to keep up with other clubs, to get into them playoffs. For me personally, and this is just a personal hope, do I have anything wrong with having loan players at the club? Absolutely not. As long as they're there, you know, young, hungry players for the right reasons, and they're allowed to spend time with you to get to know the club, the fans, but more importantly, develop their game. And with that, hand in hand, you know, it benefits, you know, the club winners. But my wish for next year is, of course, we'll still get some loans, but I'd like to see Alan Coleman and Tom specifically identify 2, 3, maybe 4 players from the amateur game for next year and give them, you know, contracts where, without being disrespectful, lower end contracts in the squad, and give them an opportunity to progress and develop. And for me, if that means we're dropping a place or two, I'd take that. And you can still, even with them players coming in, 2, 3, 4, one or two might work. And then if the other two don't, then you still go to the loan market. But it doesn't have to be this one in, one out dual registration palaver, really.
If you haven't listened to last week's podcast with Matt Shaw, it's definitely worth a listen. And my viewpoint on the league system has probably changed a little bit as a result of that conversation last week. So next season, there'll be 13 teams in the Championship for 1 year only. It'll go to 12 the following year. I'm like, you need to try and make the Championship attractive, whether it needs a rebrand, whatever. You need to make it so Widnes fans get excited, or any fans, get excited to finish as high up in the Championship as possible, to win the Championship even. If we get to a stage where all the teams in it are part-time, which potentially could happen in the next few years, it makes it more of a level playing field. It makes it more realistic for everyone to win. The way I would do it is, because they're on about putting this Super 8 in, is have called the whoever finishes first in the table after 22 rounds, 11 home and away, call them the British Rugby League champions or the British National League champions, whatever you want to call it. And then start the Super 8 as a new competition, almost like the old Premiership, and do it like that and make it. They need to create excitement about winning. It feels like with all this player chopping around, it's almost like they've created a system where the clubs are just playing for the sake of it. They're not going to be Super League clubs. They're just playing for the sake of it. Now, sport is played up and down the country at various levels for the purpose of winning. That's the bottom line. And I think we've lost that a little bit from rugby league. And I'd love to see someone grab a hold of it in the next couple of years and say, look, we aren't full-time Super League clubs. They're in their little world now. In my opinion, there's probably 7 or 8 clubs who are probably solid in Super League. The issue you've got is, I don't mind admitting to being one of these people, the issue you've got is that Widnes fans, Bradford fans, they can't understand why Salford, Lee, Huddersfield, teams like that should be in Super League and they're not. I don't think anyone's got any qualms with Warrington, St. Helens, Leeds, Hull KR to a point, Catalan being in there. I don't think people have got a qualm with that. But I think we've just got to get to a point now where people have got to realise that the gulf between full-time and part-time is so big that they've got rid of this automatic promotion relegation. Let's just let that happen as it is, but make the part-time championship or part-time rugby league, make that attractive, make players want to play in it, make it worth playing in, much like they've done with non-league football, lower league football, because that's what it's about. You've got to make it about winning. It's not about... It shouldn't be seen as a stepping stone to Super League. It shouldn't be seen as, well, it almost feels like, at the moment, that Wakefield, or even Toulouse maybe, Wakefield and Toulouse are basically just having a dress rehearsal for Super League and they just need to have 11 other teams to play against.
Yeah, no, it is a fair point. It's a crying shame, really, isn't it, James, that, like you say, it needs somebody to, after all these years, we're still saying it needs somebody to do something with it, grab hold of it, because all the ingredients are there. You take away, all right, we'll include Toulouse in that for the sake of this argument. You got Wakefield on 30 points and then Toulouse on 23, but then the rest, if you cut off Dewsbury, Dewsbury are going to get replaced, it looks like, by Oldham now. So Oldham are going to be better than Dewsbury, and that's no disrespect to Dewsbury. Then look at the game that we've just had at the Shea. Halifax are second bottom, 2 points adrift of Barrow, and we're talking about going into the Bradford game, and if we beat them, we're joint fourth, depending on goal difference, which I'm not quite sure how far we are off from Bradford with that. And that's just one example. Now, like you say, I was a massive fan of the Super 8, personally. So maybe a concept like that really worked. Like you say, you've got to make it as appealing as possible to be that league leader. Of course you have. But then almost that side reset then of side kind of regrouping. And then at it for a kind of a almost another composition, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that they call it league leaders is just an absolute, it makes it sound crap, and it's like you're underselling yourself, and I think they need to turn that around. And to me, if you could say, right, the team who finishes top of the championship is the British national champions or whatever, bear in mind that it's the European Super League, I think that works. And then you have a separate competition for the Super 8, for the Super 8's format that end in the grand final. And like I say, the old, make it like the old Premiership days. But yeah, it'd be interesting to know what other people think. So do leave a comment on wherever you listen to this podcast, or drop us a tweet or get on the Widnes Rugby League fans group on Facebook. We'll maybe put a thread on about this once it's out. Before we leave you, we ought to mention we did try and get somebody on, but we've not quite had a chance to do it. Congratulations to the Widnes Vikings women's team who won the League One Cup at the weekend. They beat Thattleheath Crusaders 20-0. Tries from Rachel Porter, Meg Schoen, Neve Gilward and Hannah Quirk. I think Hannah Quirk was man of the match, player of the match, as chosen by St. Helens and England captain Jodie Cunningham.
Yeah, I mean, for anybody listening who hasn't had a chance to watch the highlights yet on the official Widnes Vikings Facebook page, give them a watch. There were some really well-worked tries going from left to right. And then the final try, I think, by Hannah Quirk. I mean, length of the field effort. Talk about having pace to burn. It was absolutely fantastic. Worth the watch alone. So yeah, head over to the page and give it a watch. And again, like from myself personally, congratulations, ladies.
Yeah, and the good news is that my wife is pregnant with a daughter. So I suppose even if my son doesn't make it playing for Widnes, I've maybe got a backup option of a daughter potentially playing for Widnes now. So hopefully they keep banging that drum. Hopefully they get up the leagues as well. I know they're in League One this season, but hopefully they can get up to Championship and start knocking on the door a bit higher up the leagues. But yeah, well done to those players and the coaching staff for that achievement. Thanks as always, Mike, for your company. Widnes in action against Bradford this weekend, and we'll be back next week. We'll try and get a mystery guest on, and we'll have all the reactions to that, Bradford. But it feels like the weeks are flying by, Mike.
Absolutely. You know, two, three weeks ago, we're doing an episode with Ant Walker, and you're blinking, here we are now going into a game with Bradford.
I'm glad Widnes have won a couple now, because I was worried that we were a bit of a jinx, to be honest. So I'm glad they've won a couple now, and we've got that monkey off our backs.
Absolutely. And I think just to finish up, I think we've gone past it. I think a few people who I know are kill me for not mentioning this, but what was that tackle like right at the end to win the game? I mean, that typified the whole performance, didn't it, from Jordan Johnson?
Yeah. Good shout for mentioning it. Yeah, I've seen it's been clipped up a couple of times. I've seen it going round on Twitter. I mean, it would have been painful, wouldn't it, if they had scored? But yeah, he had no right really to make that tackle, to be honest. It looked for all money like Giuffre was over. I'd love to have had my commentary recorded on it, to be honest, because I was commentating on the game on Sunday. Unfortunately, when we're online only, it doesn't get recorded, so I'll never know how good it was, my commentary, sadly. But I thought it was decent at the time. I would like to have heard it back, but such is life.
Oh, I say, I mean, from where we was behind the post, he was in the motion of diving over, so he got yanked back. Like, motion was telling us he was going over that line with the ball, and watching it back from behind, it almost looks like he doesn't even know where he's going, Johnson. He just sees a blue and white shirt and absolutely throws himself at Giuffre. I mean, yeah.
It's one thing making the tackle, but he obviously had to make it in a way where he pulled him back, because if he'd have just tackled him round the waist, he stretches out and scores, but he somehow managed to get hold of him at whatever angle he was and managed to pull his whole body back round. You know, an amazing piece of strength, and especially when you consider how many minutes Johnston's played, the way that he plays the game as well. Hats off to him.
Absolutely, and I think a small mention as well. I'm sure he'll want to get his name into the mix of that tackle. I think it helped Max Roberts kind of falling across. I think I think Giuffre took a bit of a ricochet off him as well. So joint effort, but certainly Jordan Johnson's tackle, that one.
I think Mike's just exposed that Max Roberts keeps pestering him to mention him in the podcast. Maybe there we'll have to do something. We'll have to do some investigating on that in time for next week. But Mike, thanks as always for your company. Thanks to you for listening as well. Please do leave your reviews and ratings on your podcast platform, wherever you listen to us. Please do spread the word as well. The Widnes Rugby League fans Facebook group is growing in number. I think, what were you saying, 400 up to now?
Yeah.
The Widnes Rugby forum's there as well if you want to get involved on that. I'm trying to put a few more articles through the website as well. So yeah, please do engage with us best you can, and we'll try and keep the content coming. But for this week, that's all from us for now.